Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see.
Wow. My, oh, my.
Oh, and look over there.
Wow, is that Ooh. Culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong. Las Culturistas calling.
Big week.
Big week. Jester, you have done it again. I'm talking to you.
Hey, clown. Jester, you've done it again. Constantly raising the bar for the circus.
For the circus. Wait, I have to really talk to you, though. Because, Jester, you have done it again.
Jester, what are you talking about?
Jester, when you said... The way you said several weeks ago that there was always something about Catherine McPhee you couldn't put your finger on.
Oh, babe.
The way you said that.
We should be calling Miss Catherine McPhee, hey, clown. Jester,
hey, clown,
you've done it again.
When we saw her damn $500 donation to the Republican Party as of June 2020, I had to stop and really think about that. And I had to think
but
bad
But does it
thoughts.
Surprise you? Does it surprise
no.
you? The woman's married to David Foster.
I heard on the set of Smash, she would often act conservative.
Wow. And conservative behavior aligns with conservative values.
Wait, hold on. I have to say, that shook
what?
Me when I found out. And so much has shaken me over the past several weeks.
But why would it shake you? Why would it shake you, Matt, that like this like white woman like is not like... politically like aligned with you with your interests like why
I
would
don't
that
like
you?
Hearing it I don't like hearing it about any BoCo alum I don't like hearing it about
this is ultimately about BoCo alum
I don't like hearing that any BoCo alum has been donating to the Republican Party. Wait, I was really like shocked by this because I guess what it is it's like
she's an idiot. We should just first of all say that she's yeah. always been stupid. She's a dumb person.
Now to me, it's like, obviously that was some, I want to know, did the gay who does her Twitter, did he quit? Because he's got to go.
Well, wait, why does that matter?
Because he can't be associated. Whoever this gay is that runs her Twitter, and there's a gay who runs her Twitter, and it has to be. Because she sometimes does like come through with some tweets that I'm like, all right. And whoever she's employing
yeah,
to do
yeah.
that, I hope puts in their 2 weeks notice. If that 2 weeks notice is not accepted, I hope they walk right out.
There was just the joke of, hi, my little log cabin Republicans.
I love
that.
That
made me laugh.
Hi, my gay boys. And now that I think that she said, hi, my gay boys, I'm like, don't ever speak to us again.
Nothing has ever made sense with her. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
Something's off.
I mean, this just means that you gotta be a Megan Hilty person at this point, from this point on.
Oh, if you're not Megan Hilty Hive, then we can't talk.
We can't talk.
If you were still waffling between Team Karen and Team Ivy, you gotta take a serious, long walk. And that's actually Rule of Culture number 94.
If you are still waffling
between Team
Ivy
and Team
Karen,
you need to
take
a long walk.
It's right there in the name, Team Karen. Now, I really want to sort of switch gears, and I am...
Oh, my God. Her name was Karen.
Yeah.
It all makes sense. Jester, you have done it again.
Jester, you've done it again. I want to switch gears real fast. Speaking of jesters, I'm finally on your side on Team Matt with the whole vow discourse, because I can't believe we're on episode 5. We've only crested the hill. There's 4 more episodes left, and I was talking to our friend Joe Firestone about this over text. Too many shots of people thinking and standing and putting their hands to their mouths. Too many shots of people thinking, girl, this is not a game show, okay?
No.
I don't want to see people think.
It's full of jesters. It's jesters that are making the vow. I'm really on my jester grind today. I feel that the nation is full of jesters, and I'm not even
yeah.
kidding. Let's just say this. I am 100% in agree with you about the vow, and I actually haven't even seen the episode this week because it got such negative reviews that I was just like, you know what, girl? I'm actually going to take a little bit of a break and maybe binge it later, but that actually sounds like a bad plan because it's so boring.
It just has these like long stretches of tension, but the rest of it is just like you're watching people like flip through photo albums and like talk about how their, you know, rich mothers talking about their daughters being like part of this. It's like, I cannot sympathize with the wealthy at this time in the culture. I'm sorry.
I totally agree. And right now, I feel like because we've been topical because of the COVID-19 pandemic,
yes.
we've been sort of following the vow, and we've also been following the Real Housewives of Potomac, which week was really on fire.
Really great episode.
It really was on fire, and we saw the beginning, we saw the actual beginning of the physical altercation that was Candace and Monique, and I think we can reveal at this time that Bo and Yang will be on Watch What Happens Live with Ms. Monique Samuels. And this
October
is 4th. Too much! watch for me. It's Watch What Happens Live is my favorite show. It's my favorite show.
I'm very excited. October 4th.
Oh, hun.
Oh, it's going to be with... Wait, did you say who I was going to be with?
I said it was with Monique.
Monique Samuels.
The villain of the season.
Sympathetic, though, in a lot of ways.
I'm actually still team Monique.
It's storylines that sort of go back to season 4, I would say, you know? Like, the Monique Candace conflict has been sort of brewing.
I'm still team Monique.
You know, I can sort of see where Candace is coming from too. So Candace last night on Watch What Happens Live was paired with Michael Rapaport, which I thought was very funny. But Michael knew the ins and outs of all of Potomac, all of Beverly Hills. He's a huge Bravo fan.
He is the number one Bravo fan in all the country.
Yes. So, you know, and I gotta say, like, Candace. The reason why Potomac is my favorite franchise is because I truly am rooting genuinely for all 7 of these women. I love all 7 of these women so much. Mm-hmm. It's not like New York where I'm just like, God, I want to push Ramona into a sewer. I want to take away her things. I want to watch her suffer. Yeah. But with Potomac, it's like, oh no, I love all of these women genuinely.
I know, it's hard to watch them fight. And also, we haven't even discussed the fact that the Michael and Ashley of it all. That scene was too much for me.
Take him out. We don't need to see him. We don't need to see his blotchy ass face.
I'm going to revisit this later. I don't think so, honey. And that's that on that right now. Okay. But we will talk more about that when I Don't Think So, Honey rolls the damn around like it always does on an episode of Las Culturistas. And you know what also always happens on Las Culturistas?
What's that?
Well, it's actually not true, but what I was going to say is we always have a guest. And this episode is
Jester,
no different.
You've done it again.
Jester, I have done it again. And speaking of Jester, interesting.
Interesting.
This episode we have today, this is an episode that's close to my heart. Because I have very rarely, actually, become, I feel like, so close with someone so quickly.
Yes.
And I actually haven't seen our guest since we wrapped filming the show that we have coming out this week, or I should really more say that she has coming out this week because the show was
both
inspired.
Of you.
Well, I'm presenting the program, and this show.
She's
is
the
called,
Jacques Torres to your Nicole Byer.
In many ways. And then Robin Thede is there being Robin Thede and killing it. By the way, let's
statue.
Stop everything right now. We have to stop everything right now and
stunning
say, Robin
at the Emmys.
Thede, that was one of the best Emmy looks I have ever
the level
seen.
Of serve.
One of the best
the
red
level
carpet
of
looks.
Serve.
Wayman and Micah dressed that young woman, and I have to say something. They also styled us for our show called
Oh My God,
Hot Dog. Now, Hot Dog, as I've alluded to on the podcast, is coming out this week. It's coming out on September 24th, which is truly tomorrow, or actually, honestly, midnight tonight.
I can't wait. I cannot wait to watch this.
Can you even believe?
I have been, I would say, just as excited as you for this.
Wow, that's huge.
I've been pretty excited. I've brought it up sort of casually in our conversations. I'm like, I can't wait to watch this damn show.
I think that you'll really enjoy it. Even if I wasn't in it, I think that you would, like, love it. So we actually, Jess and I got to watch the first episode today, and it is really fun, and it's really watchable. It's going to be super bingeable, and you'll be able to binge it when 6 episodes are released at midnight tonight, aka September 24th, Thursday, for people who have decided they are going to sleep tonight and wait and wake up in the morning and watch it before they, you know, get on their Zooms for work. And it also will be available at night if you'd like to do your Zoom work first and then start to binge the show. So there's so many ways you can go about watching Hot Dog on September 24th this week. But what it is it's a dog grooming competition show. And that is apt because our guest today is a legend in the dog grooming industry. And I actually was privy to all the contestants on the show sort of gagging over our guest here today, who is the head judge. She's like the grooming expert.
Yes.
And Robin Thede is the hot expert. Like, she's judging based on, like, trends and fashion and all that. But not only is our and I'm the host, and I'm like sort of like gay and squawking and walking around. And so this is so fun, and I can't wait for you guys to watch 6 episodes that come out this week. And in addition to all that, our guest is an author. You can get Jess Rona's Groomed. It will look perfect on your coffee table reader. I know it. And a powerful Instagram influencer, okay? She actually revolutionized something called giving dogs their Beyonce moment. Have you seen
the
this?
The wind machine and the music.
Darling.
Essential.
Darling.
Essential.
And making the dogs look like true dolls.
She's an artist. She's a true artist.
Phenomenon, icon, and our guest today. And I want you all to welcome into your ears at this time, my friend, the wonderful Jess Rona! Come on in, woman.
Come on in, woman.
Wow, are you giving yourself your own applause?
I've always wanted to do that.
Wow.
Honestly, you're actually giving
me... I've always wanted to do that.
That's a really good idea for us. Maybe we should put in a little sound effect every time we have a guest.
Yes, we should have a sounding board. We should have a thing.
I've always wanted
to do that. Am I inspiring you guys?
Yes, you are. Look at this fount of creativity that you have been already.
Thank you.
And I was saying, she's a fount.
She's a fount.
Guys,
she's a fount.
Wait, I have to tell you something.
What?
You guys, not ruined, but you inspired me to not love the vow either.
Oh, okay.
What do you mean? Were you like very much into it and then you heard us kind of like be dour and
I wasn't ever very much into it, but I felt like maybe there was something missing or just it was so slow. I was enjoying it and looking forward to each episode. But after the third episode, I listened to your episode where you guys started talking about it and I was like, holy shit, they are right. Like it's like boring and slow and it's like I like when Matt was like, I love how it's like the voiceover over that visual, which was really cool. And it's not like 100% bad, but I'm disappointed in it because I totally listened to the Uncovered Nexium podcast. Did you guys listen to that?
Mm. I didn't. I don't think Matt did either, but you, so you're getting the full like compendium.
I already knew
of
the story.
Yeah.
This is a new spin on the story, but I'm with you guys.
Yeah, I have to say, like, it doesn't take a lot for me to be like, I stan this show about not being in a cult. Like, I watched a lot of Scientology in the aftermath because but the thing is,
that's because you love Leah Remini and there's
a
person pulling you in.
And I'm telling you,
it needs a Leah.
It needs a Leah type.
It needs a Leah. It does. Because Leah is so upset and she just cares about these people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you guys see the Paris Hilton doc?
No. Oh, my God. Wait, did you watch it? Can you talk about it?
I did.
Wait, Bowen, did you watch it?
I just before this recording watched an interview of Paris Hilton on the Drew Barrymore show, and it was just, like, very bizarre.
How's the Drew show? I want to see that.
It's surreal. It sort of harkens back to, like, Tyra Banks' daytime sort of, stint. But
so, wait, Jess, did you watch it?
Yes. I watched
Report
it.
Report to
and,
us. What
well, is... I can see where you would think it would be like a victim thing, but it's sort of something where she's like, I've become a character. This isn't me. And I don't want to be this anymore. I think she could have leaned into that a little bit more, but my heart goes out to her because.
Well, damn.
She has these horrible nonstop nightmares of being dragged out of her room and taken to boarding school. And I think that actually happened and her parents were just standing there and they didn't do anything and they dragged her out of her room. She was like, help me. And they didn't do anything. And she went to this boarding school where the people who were in this boarding school are now calling themselves survivors of it.
Yeah.
Because it was so they were abused sexually, physically, emotionally in front of everyone. They keep using the word traumatized.
Wow.
And it sounds horrible. And also, you know, she talks about how the sex tape came out when she was 18. She did not consent to it.
Right.
And she's like, it feels like I was raped, it was like a cyber rape. She's like, it seems like I was raped like this. And can you imagine? And she's like, I can't trust my parents. I can't trust my family. I can't trust anybody anymore. And it's like, just imagine. Mm. Yes, of course, she created her reality and all that. But you know, I just feel my heart really goes out to her. And she seems like such a good person. Like, I recommend watching this.
I have heard that she comes off as someone who makes a lot more sense after someone would watch it. Because exactly what you're saying is true. I mean, that is a sexual assault. I mean, when someone's nudes leak and, like, we're just so desensitized to it, like, the whole sex tape of it all and, like, there's so much questioning about how those things get out there and like what the intentions are of the person in them, or did they release them, whatever. And I feel like because they quote unquote gain so much from those releases in the eyes of the public, because we think fame is everything, we're not actually thinking about and considering like the trauma that yeah. is. And I think that, you know, it was only when Jennifer Lawrence's nude photos leaked that someone that was in that it was happening to used the words sexual assault and that they felt like they were being raped. And sure. that makes perfect sense to me. And I've heard that Kathy Hilton comes off really bad
yeah.
in the documentary.
She really does. She just doesn't ever apologize. And maybe she wow. did in the interview, but they don't put it in the edit. So I don't know. But she just wasn't like, listen to me. I love you. I'm so sorry this happened to you. I'm in so much pain because I know that I caused this. She should have, you know, as an audience member, I was wishing that she would say something like that. Mm, but, yeah. You know, and like, it's just really sad because she was an 18-year-old girl. And when the yeah. sex tape came out, it was, oh, look at what a slut she is. And yeah. never talked about this older man who did this to her. And he never really was held accountable. Sorry, did this just totally take a turn?
No. This is great.
This okay. is great.
Okay. No, this is great.
This is great because, she was saying in this interview on Drew Barrymore that the original sort of intention for this doc was just to show her as this businesswoman, which is this other thing that she has had to sort of like correct for, because people have just thought of her as this like frivolous person. But that was like the original sort of way in. But then she and the director got so close that the director was able to sort of have Paris open up to her about this really traumatizing experience at school. I just like that it sort of organically came out of this baseline foundational sort of premise that like makes sense and like wouldn't be too compelling necessarily, Matt and I sort of met her.
We literally met her.
We interviewed her.
When?
At Tribeca Film Festival.
Vulture Fest for Vulture, yeah.
We were working for Vulture. It was the Tribeca Film Festival, and she was promoting the other documentary. It was the American Meme. Yes. Yeah. Mm. And she was like a big part of that, and she really wanted people to see it because I do think it's important to her at this stage that people don't see her as, you know, what she created in the wake of her very sudden and intense fame. And I think that, you know, we should also say, she's a very complicated figure. You know, yes. Like she definitely did come out and say that she was like, she was definitely a Trump apologist, and she may very well be a Trump voter. We don't know, but she definitely said some weird shit about him. So that's tough. But at the end of the day, it's like something that I don't think we as a society really ever grapple with. And I think now we're all like, hashtag free Britney, come on, please. We don't ever take accountability for the way we treated those women at that time. And I'm specifically talking about Britney Spears, Paris Hilton.
Lindsay Lohan,
who mm-hmm. these women are now shells
yep.
of what they were. And mm-hmm. Paris is like still standing and still doing her thing. But you see now that it was not like this rose-colored glasses world. Like, it was tough. Like, they went through serious stuff. And I think the paparazzi moment that was, like, that those years of, like, 2005, 2010, like, that was, like, a really dark period for young mm-hmm. Hollywood, you know? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. But that culture is dying now.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that there are paparazzi now anyway. Are they? Do they still exist?
Well, now, like, the common conception around paparazzi is that, like, anytime your photos go on Us Weekly, it's that you called them yourself.
Yeah. Which happens, I think. I mean, that was, like, a whole plot on Selling Sunset was Christine was, like leveraging against the other women, being like, well, you know,
Heather's
don't just show up. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Which I love.
Then, yeah, but I love that can be a thing.
But I love that Christine is demystifying, like, paparazzi culture to the audience. Yeah. Anyway, now I have to watch this.
Yeah, I really want to watch it. You do recommend it?
Okay, I'm shocked that I know something that I've watched something that you guys haven't. I was so scared coming on this podcast.
No,
because you guys are so I mean, you're just tapped into the pulse of
You think we're literate? Are you saying we're literate? Are you calling us literate in pop culture?
You are culturally literate, and I am culturally illiterate.
We have a good media diet.
I'm illiterate, but like, yeah, no, you guys, I was like, they're going to talk about so many things I have no clue about.
No.
We've
been spinning our wheels and talking about The Vow and Potomac for like 4 weeks at this
point.
Oh,
I started watching Potomac because
it's
so
good. You'll love it. It's great.
Yeah,
it's
so I think I did. Didn't I tell you it was the crown jewel?
Yeah. I started watching it, and then I got really into Succession. Have you guys seen Succession?
I'm on season two.
So what? I'm going to start it this week.
Oh, you're on season two. I thought you said I'm in season two. I was like, what?
I'm Cherry Jones.
We have Cherry.
Cherry Jones.
No, but I honestly, like, I was watching the Emmys. Did you watch the Emmys? Did both of you watch the Emmys?
No, but I saw who won and who didn't for the most part.
All right, so I have some thoughts about this, too, because Succession, I actually hadn't seen, and I have been really wanting to see it. And obviously, now I really, really want to see it. Not that I needed it to win Emmys to want to. But it's like, here's my thing with the Emmys. It feels like Succession was like, what won the drama awards? Watchmen is like, what won the limited series awards? Mm-hmm. And then obviously Schitt's Creek is the only show that won a comedy award. So it's interesting to me, like whenever the Emmys come around, and I sort of vocalized this on Twitter during the show, and people wanted to kill me because the white gays who love Schitt's Creek are out for blood.
You weren't even being specific about Schitt's Creek.
I'm not coming for Schitt's Creek. And I actually, if people want to know, I think Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy are legends. I think Annie Murphy is a star. Mm-hmm. And I have the utmost respect for Dan Levy for creating that and using his privilege and the nepotism that he very much has, because let's be real, like, he has it. And he actually created something that people really connect to instead of garbage or instead of doing nothing. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he used his massive privilege and like the nepotism that he got from being able to run a room while never having a single day of experience doing that, which is unheard of. And he used that to create something that people fucking love. And I respect that. My perspective on it is one thing shouldn't win everything. Yes.
Exactly. In the year 2020, with so much, with the glut of good TV that's out there, and this applies to Succession and Watchmen and Schitt's Creek, like, one thing shouldn't sweep every single category.
It's just not possible. You know, you can't tell me, you cannot tell me that one thing in every single aspect was the best thing across the board.
But the media
really
takeaways,
sense.
But the ways that the Emmys are like promotional arms for the TV industry, like the takeaways for every year are Fleabag crushed, or Schitt's Creek
Maisel
crushed, or Veep Maisel crushed,
Modern Family every year. Like, it seems like
exactly
this is part of
the narrative of the Emmys, which is that show did great. And it's not like the Oscars where it's like, you know, every movie that wins an Oscar gets like 8 sequels. It's like it's just incentivizing people to watch these shows as they fill more episodes. That's just like that's kind of built into the Emmys in a way that is unique to them as this awards show.
Do you watch Schitt's Creek, Jess?
Yes.
Do you love it?
I love it. I do think it's not a perfect show. Sometimes I'm uninterested in storylines or uninterested in characters. Like you said, Annie Murphy, I mean,
she's
so
terrific.
Fucking amazing. I cannot. And like the core four are incredible. The ancillary characters I don't love as much.
Yeah. For me, it just started really slow, so it was hard for me to get into it, and that's why I haven't. It obviously hit a stride at some point, because people love it so much, and I am interested to get into it. My thing is just like, it won all 4 acting awards, and series, and writing, and directing. And that to me is just like wild. And you also can't use the excuse to me where it's like, well, they didn't win anything for the first 4 or 5 years or whatever, because it's like Keenan is there and he hasn't won shit for 16 years, okay?
Betty Gilpin then, has not been recognized for Glow.
And Darcy Carden literally had no nominations until this year. So yeah. Don't use the whole thing of, but they've never gotten anything with me, because that it doesn't hold any water.
But Matt, you haven't watched any of these like sweepy shows this year. You haven't seen Watchmen, you haven't seen Succession. Is that correct?
Why are you doing this to me?
I haven't seen Watchmen either. You're not alone.
I'm just saying, like, this probably gives you some perspective on this, where you're like, as someone who doesn't watch these shows and as someone who consumes a lot of TV, I haven't watched these shows. And so these awards don't speak to me as a viewer, to my viewing habits.
Well, you know, I guess it's just
I'm not discrediting you. I'm just
why
saying
are you
it's
doing
interesting.
This to him?
No, honestly, I just want
to
know why you're doing this to me. First of all, my one question, my retort back to you is, number one, why are you doing this to
why
me?
Why are you doing
Second
this to
Second of
me?
All is, literally, this, there is so much stuff, and this is the real truth. Over the past, like, months of quarantine, I have not wanted to watch anything substantial. I've only wanted to watch the most trash thing I can put in front of me. Seriously. And so
it
now
goes down,
it's
stuff
like,
that goes down. It's not trash. It's just stuff that goes down easy.
Yes, you're right. It's not trash. And it's actually important to say reality TV is not trash. And it's rule of culture number three.
Reality TV is not trash. What a hot take in 2020.
I am so hot. I'm so hot on this take. But I here's the thing, like, Watchmen, everyone that's obsessed with it is so obsessed with it.
You guys will love it. It's
I'm
so
gonna watch
perfect.
It. Really?
It's one of the best things I've ever seen.
Wow.
Same thing with Succession and Schitt's Creek. People are fanatical about it, which means it's got to be doing something right. I just feel like it's crazy when one thing dominates everything. And I'm on the record with this about the Grammys, too, because the Grammys is really bad with it.
Yeah,
where it's
it
feels like one artist comes in and they win everything. And it's like, you know, it's just weird. And I also understand that, you know, the nature of the way the Television Academy votes, it's not like you get a ballot and you fail at everything. You know, actors vote for actors, writers vote for writers, producers vote for shows that the top line shows or whatever. So I get that it's not like that. It's just always seems to shake out a certain way. And I'm like, you know, this can't possibly be true. But I get that people love what they love. And I'm not coming for Schitt's Creek. The way that people reacted towards
the way the white gays...
And
came
it
for
is,
this
y-
other
it
white
is
gay.
Y'all. It is us.
Girl.
They were eating their own.
Can I say something about Succession?
Please.
You can say
on.
Whatever you want about Succession.
Yes, whatever you want. This is your episode.
This
well,
is
I just
your
wanted
Lost
to let
cult.
You know, Matt, that it took me 3 episodes to really get into Succession. The beginning was kind of slow for me, and I probably watched those 3 episodes within like a 2-month period.
Right.
Like I just was not looking for it. And I was like, and my friend Sammy was just like, you got to watch it. It's so, so good. And then finally I was like, okay, fine. I'm just going to sit down and really watch this. And then episode 4 or 5, and then I was like totally hooked.
Yeah. By the end of season 1, you're in. And Matt, you will be obsessed with Shiv, the character of Shiv. You will love.
First of all, doesn't she look like a pinup character from, or a pinup girl from the 40s? Like
yeah,
her
sure.
face.
Yes.
It's just, that's what I think of. When I, and you know, she's Australian.
Yeah, I know, really? And the husband, Tom is British.
He is?
Yeah,
oh.
Tom's British.
Let me just tell you, the acting, it's the best acted show I've ever seen.
Yes, very good acting.
I mean, you're talking to someone whose favorite show of all time is Mad Men, so I don't mind sitting with
really?
Something until
I mean,
it
Mad
gets
Men's
good.
Amazing. It's
my,
up there.
That's my favorite show.
It's,
I just think it was so well done.
Show.
Yeah, it was
Succession
so
is
well
like Mad Men. There's tones of Mad Men, but it's also so funny. It's like Kieran Culkin is so good.
He's so good. Oh,
Cousin
man.
Greg is such a good character. I mean, like there's so much to like about this show.
Mm-hmm.
There are
funny moments where you're not expecting it. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm excited. I'm really excited to start watching it because I do think I will love it. And then we should just also say the biggest shout out to Ms. Zendaya.
Oh my God.
Who won, bitch?
She deserves it. That role she played, holy shit. She was so good in that show.
It's one of those, it's this Matt Rogers criterion where no other actor could have done that.
I always say, like, the award should go to someone who it feels like no one else could have done that part. You know what I mean? And I actually rewatched the scene where she goes to, it was episode 3 of Euphoria, and it's a scene where she goes to get drugs from her dealer, and he says to her for the first time, I'm not giving them to you.
And then she like freaks out at the door.
Yeah, yeah. And she basically has a panic attack at the door. Yeah. I was like, you know, this young girl Zendaya is beyond. She is, not only is she a star in the way that she carries herself, but she is so gifted at acting. She's a great dancer. She is a fantastic singer. I mean, she's captivating. She's one. She's like a real crown jewel of her entire generation. And we're going to be talking about her for years to come, I believe.
Yeah,
I agree.
I believe so.
She is so good.
Yes. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with Jess Rona. We're back with Jess Rona. I want to know something. Oh. I want both of you to in tandem track the beginnings of the meeting, the rapport you guys built on set. I want to know everything because Jess, Matt was truly singing your praises every single day.
No.
I love you.
I was like, okay.
Oh my
I was
God,
like,
I love
she
you.
Seems so cool.
I love you. I adore you.
Talk about the process of the show and how you guys became friends over the course of production.
Well, I just want to say, and like, this isn't like what happened in the beginning, but I right away, I knew Matt is so easy to talk to.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, isn't he? Like, he just like gets right there. And I think it's partly because he's a Pisces, but like, he'll just like get on your level. And just, if you're on your knees, he'll get on his knees and just look at, like, we're in this together and like, let's unpack, you know, let's talk. And
what's your sign?
I'm an Aries.
Okay, great.
Pisces Aries is very good. I'm supposed to marry an Aries.
Really?
I'm supposed to.
Okay.
I was in love with an Aries.
Really?
Was in love with
no.
One.
Bowen's a Scorp.
I'm a Scorpio.
Oh, I get along well with Scorpios. Mm-hmm, are we both fire signs? No. What's a Scorpio?
Pisces and Scorpio are water.
We're water.
Okay, gotcha.
I'm water.
Yeah.
Triple water placement. Yeah.
I'm water.
Well, Yeah. Are you water?
I'm water.
You're water? Okay, gotcha.
I knew immediately that we were going to get along. We actually have a mutual friend, and literally this is so funny because Bowen knows this person too from high school. Liz L. Renly.
Oh my God, Liz!
Liz.
You went to high school with Liz?
She was my sister's year in high school, yeah.
No way!
So Liz is a writer. She's written for so many things. She's most recently Special, and I know her because she's very close with Jared. That was what we first started talking about, and I stand having a mutual friend with someone. I love it because then you can just talk about that mutual friend for like 45 seconds to a minute, and then you're off to the races. You have the rhythm,
yeah,
and then
so
you're in. Oh my God,
so
if you're
true.
Ever, shout out to anyone out there, any reader who's nervous about meeting someone and you want it to go well, find the mutual friend.
That's so true.
What if there's no mutual friend? What are they to do?
You got to service them sexually.
Yes.
And then you're off to the races.
And then
you're off
to the races.
45
seconds later, you know the rhythm, you're off to the races.
You're off to the races.
Wait, speaking of shout outs, before this episode is over, I need to make a shout out to one of and you call your listeners readers?
Readers.
Yes.
They read.
One of your readers is a groomer and he's in Florida. His name is Jonathan David. And
Hi,
he
Jonathan
loves
David.
You guys, and he's like, "Oh my God, I was listening to Las Culturistas, and they just announced that Matt is the host of Hot Dog. That's my favorite podcast."
Jonathan David.
So he's gonna flip when I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna shout out Jonathan. He's a very well known dog groomer, and he's
oh really?
Yes, he is just so talented. He's a judge. He's like very fancy in the grooming world.
Will he come on the show?
Oh, yes."
Oh
he would flip out.
No, I
he
mean come
die.
Compete on Hot Dog.
Oh, compete. Oh, I thought you meant like as a guest on this show. I was like, oh my God, yes.
Yes, why not, Jonathan
no,
David?
No, here's the thing. Like, I don't think he wants to compete anymore. I think he wants to just be a judge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't want to go back to competing.
That's interesting. He's earned his spot. But okay,
yeah,
but,
totally.
So I still want to know more about this this friendship budding. But just talk a little bit to me as a person who's not versed in this, who's not literate. what the network of dog groomers, how that sort of what that looks like, what the shape of that is like, because I feel like you came into it the way you came into it with these like these incredible videos, and then did you start to sort of like pick up on this network that was already sort of in place?
I actually, so there are trade shows and conventions throughout the year all over the United States. And it's always the same people at the trade shows, all the same scissor booths and, you know, and Matt loves when I say scissoring spray.
Can you say scissoring spray again?
Scissoring spray.
Thank you.
you know, like, you see all the same people, and there are grooming competitions at these trade shows, and you see all the same competitors. So it's kind of like a grooming community. And so I was competing back in 2012, and I was just really invested and involved in the grooming world, wanting to get better. There's seminars, classes. It's a whole world that people don't realize.
It's an amazing community. It really is.
And so Jonathan David is sort of like he judges grooming competitions, and he teaches seminars. People ask him for advice on haircuts or business, and because his business is really successful. And so he's sort of like that type of person in the industry. But yeah, I started making my videos actually when I was kind of in a dark, low place in my life, and I was just antsy. And so the videos weren't really like... Well, they made me well known in like the real world, but like I didn't get well known in the grooming world until like a few years later.
And so what was that? Was that just kind of like you built an Instagram presence, or were you doing really well on the circuit? Like, how did you become, because you should see like, and you will see like the respect and the reverence that the contestants have for Jess. She truly is like, you know, the, I'm trying to find a good one-to-one, but like, and
the
I don't
Anne Hathaway of dog grooming.
Stop.
No, we love Anne.
We love Anne. So she,
I said Oprah. But, you know,
no, she really is Oprah, not. Dr. Me.
What I'm saying is, like, I'm trying to make, like, a one-to-one on, like, another reality show. But, like, what I mean is, like, she is, like, the Simon. Like, if you go in audition for American Idol.
Very Mary Berry, maybe?
Very that. Very, like, Tom Colicchio that.
Yes.
So, and I was just, like, really observing everyone come in. And they see Jess and, you know, they look at each other and they're like, oh, my God. Because they're seeing, like, a celebrity to them. Yes. And a lot of times you would know those groomers as well that were coming on and competing. Because this is the community, right? Like, y'all know each other.
I knew a lot of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them. But like, you know when you meet someone and they're just so good at what they do and you're just like, it's like magic? That I'm like that with groomers too. I'm like, your work is so good that you get a little starstruck. And it's still, you know, something I'm not used to when people react to me that way. But yeah, that's how it is in the grooming world. It's just a tiny version of like, you know, Hollywood. Just
how did you get into it? Like, how did you get into dog grooming? Like, what? Because it's something that, you know it has to happen, but you don't think about when you're like growing up, like, I'm going to grow up and be a dog groomer. It's just not what you think. So how did you get into it?
It's not what I was thinking.
Some people do.
Some people.
But yes.
Well, a lot more now after this show comes out.
Well, I think so. I hope so. I'd love to change the grooming industry. I stumbled upon it. I just needed a job when I was 18, and I started bathing dogs because it was the least 9-to-5 job I could find. My mom always got cat food at PetSmart, and she dragged me to PetSmart, you know, and she's like, oh, there's a help wanted sign. You need a job. So, and then on the application, there were all these different jobs that you could do at PetSmart, like work in the aquatic section or work as a cashier or whatever. And then I see dog bather. And I was just like, okay, well, I don't know anything about dogs.
That sounds cute
cats.
As fuck.
It sounds cute as fuck. It doesn't sound like a regular job. And so I started doing it without ever thinking it would turn into a career. I was always wanting to be an actress. I was class clown. I was like just a ham wanting to be an actress. So I was like, okay, I'll do this for now. And then over the years, I started grooming dogs more. I started learning, you know, how to do a schnauzer cut and what's a cocker spaniel cut or whatever. And I just started to learn how to do it over the years. So it just kind of happened organically.
And then how long after you're doing it do you start competing?
Oh, my God. So I was also waiting tables a lot, and my dream was to be a waiter or waitress, and I could wait tables and then go on auditions during the day and right. wait tables at night. That was my big goal.
You wanted to do the grind.
I wanted to do the grind, baby. So I ended up, I was waiting tables at night, grooming dogs during the day. I worked at Buca di Beppo.
Oh my God, huge. Are you going to go to the Capri
Room? At the Grove? Which Buca di Beppo?
I worked at the one on City Walk.
Oh my God.
Incredible. You are really a legend.
Thank you so much. I was the one really that gave tours of the kitchen. You know when you would go in and people would give tours of the kitchen? I would do that. I waited. I was a food runner. I was just like, my dream was to be a waitress.
Oh my God. I was an iconic waitress too. I was also a food runner. Yeah. There was a whole summer where I was a food runner and I couldn't touch a plate that was too hot. Give me a plate that's hot. I can handle it.
Oh, I bet. I can see that. And also, we had three flights of stairs, so I would carry, and I could still do it. If you give me a big-ass tray, I bet I can carry three lasagnas on that tray up three flights of stairs. God. I bet I could do it. It's
and
like muscle memory.
Give a tour afterwards.
Honestly, name another legend.
Name another legend.
That's Jess my new Roman. Thing I say about Bowen and now Jess. Name another legend. Whenever Bowen puts out a photo that's fire, I just say, name another legend. That's actually title of app. Name another legend.
I love that. Okay, so Jess, so you're waiting tables and you start to compete.
So I waited tables and I slowly started actually phasing out grooming. And I moved to New York, started doing UCB, was working
UCB,
at the Stanton Social.
Original.
Yes.
I was just like waiting
Stanton
tables.
Social.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. That also had three flights of stairs, which was very weird. And so I kind of quit grooming for a little while. And then I realized I don't want to be a waitress anymore after 6 years. I was just like, I remember this skill I had. And I was just like, I want to really get good at grooming. So I came back to LA after living in New York for a few years. And I just dove into grooming dogs. And that's where I started competing. That's when I would meet my grooming idols and ask them a million questions. Mm-hmm. And that's when I just decided to get really good at it.
Wow. But while also keeping this track of acting, because she books and
she's doing
things.
Well,
so I was an intern at UCB at night and I was like, I lived up the street from UCB Franklin and worked across the street at Tailwashers. So I never left that little corner. And I was just immersed in dog grooming and improv for so many years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just trying to get
Franklin?
Good.
Well, that's literally where I live.
Not the Scientology Center.
No, I live behind Gelson's on Bronson.
Oh.
So you know that's literally my neighborhood. My neighbor is Kirstie Alley in the Celebrity Center.
Yeah.
Literally.
Oh, I know exactly where you live because I have your address.
Yeah,
literally.
That's true. But so then you're like competing. And when does it get to the point where you become like really, really good? Like, and when did you realize like, oh, this is like, I'm not competitive. I'm like one of the ones.
I think I started realizing that when I was, so I got fired from my job because I kept having to leave for auditions. And honestly, I don't think I'm a good employee to have. I'm very entrepreneurial. And like, I think my boss was right for firing me because I just had to leave all the time for these dumb commercial auditions that you'd have to go to Santa Monica, like at the drop of a hat. And so I started working. I converted my garage into a grooming studio. And it was that time when I was able to, I wasn't very busy. People didn't know what, I just wanted to groom my friend's dog. So I didn't have a ton of clients. So I just really took my time and would take, like, I would just do one dog at a time and just really work on my craft and getting really good. And I entered myself in grooming competitions and I placed in every competition. I didn't win until last year, but, I placed and I think when you make a decision to do something, it's very powerful in anyone's life. So I just decided.
In any kind of endeavor, like mentally committing yourself to something is kind of, it sounds simplistic, it sounds reductive, but it's like sometimes that is just very, very, very powerful in the ways that you follow through on that. That's very cool.
And so it went from like you're grooming your friend's dogs to you now groom the dogs of Katy Perry, you know, like, I think Ellen Pompeo. Like, you are now a celebrity dog groomer.
I love Ellen Pompeo.
I mean, we love Ellen Pompeo.
I met her. She's a schmoop. She has the biggest heart. She loves her dogs. She's the coolest.
I mean, you groom some cool... I mean, I can't believe you have a relationship with the Nugget Perry.
I know. Nuggy.
Nugget.
She's my tiny little baby.
Oh, Nugget. Nugget has a sister. Daisy.
Oh, yes. A human sister. I was like...
Nugget now has a human sister. Daisy Bloom.
Yes. Daisy Dove.
Daisy Bloom. Daisy Dove. What's the hardest breed of dog to groom? Is it a poodle, I would imagine?
No, I love poodles. For me, I think it depends on the groomer. For me, the hardest dog is a soft-coated Wheaton Terrier.
Ooh,
guys.
Give me one second. Soft-coated.
Well, you would be... this is another really
that's
cool thing about
the show.
The hairs are long, but they're such beautiful dogs.
This is another really cool thing about the show, too, is like, I love dogs, but I didn't know all the breeds. This show has all different kinds of breeds, and every episode, it's like, they all get assigned like a different kind of small dog they all have to do the same thing to in the mini challenge. And then in the main challenge, M-A-N-E, they basically get any dog that they want to do a creative transformation with based on the theme. So there's themes like Old Hollywood Glamour. There's themes like Disco Inferno. There's
and
themes
Western,
like
Pop Star. Pop Star.
Yeah, Western. Pop Star.
Pop Star is probably one of my favorite episodes. It's amazing. I cannot wait for people to see it.
And so what I want everyone to know is that the show, the aesthetic of the show, is very much based on Jess's aesthetic, which is like, how would you describe it?
Yes. I would say kitschy 70s glam with a little wink and humor.
Spacey Casey.
Yeah.
Casey Musgraves?
I mean, I just love her, but, you know, it's just,
I was getting Spacey Casey vibes.
Really?
I was like, this is very wood paneled, retro, like, life.
And the wood paneling was just, it just happened. Like, the garage of the rented house I live in had wood paneling, and I would just... Mm-hmm. I would go to a thrift store or something and see a portrait of a dog and get it. And it just never really was intentional, but it just sort of organically appeared as my brand. And then people were like, oh my God, the wood paneling. Like, they started reacting to it. And I was like, this is my thing.
Yeah.
But well, I've always been really like a hippie and into 70s. And like, I've just always been like that anyway.
Because you're from LA. So it's like 70s, but in the LA context where... you have these Hollywood elements in it. And like, that is such a solid, you know, story, just aesthetically. I love that.
Well, I can't wait for you to see my new shop. I just moved out of the garage a month ago.
We drove past it.
I didn't see.
I would love to come.
I mean, I just took the aesthetic and like ramped it up and did it the way I want to do it versus just the way it happened to happen. But yeah, I finally, after 6 years, I'm out of my garage.
Wow.
It's
that garage
a big
is iconic,
time.
Though.
And the move from the garage to the corner of Larchmont and Melrose is a massive one. And I'm so excited for the store to open up, or the shop to open up, rather.
Yeah. But I mean, it's open.
Is it open now?
It's open. We did a soft opening. Yeah, we've been open for a few weeks.
Wow, I never know what's open anymore in the COVID era.
Yeah, we're open.
Now I'm
come
so
over.
Excited to know that people can... Oh, I'm gonna come. But, okay, so I want to know, like, because I do know this, but how does it become a television show?
Well, okay, so people are fascinated with celebrity. I don't know. I don't expect you guys to understand that, but I'm just kidding. But like, so I've been approached to do reality shows for years and years, and I always said no. It's just not what I want to do. And I met Nicole, and she has this beautiful red poodle named Doug. And so I met Nicole's husband on set when I was Katy Perry's Dogs Glam Squad.
Okay? Nicole is the producer of Hot Dog, Nicole Yaron, and she was like a producer for The Voice. And
she created Making It with Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman. She's a force. She's a visionary. She is so brilliant. I think she's a genius.
Yeah, she's great.
There's very few people that I've ever met like her. But So I met her husband on set at a Katy Perry commercial thing where I was like, Katy's dog's glam squad. And he's like, if I ever get a dog, you have to groom it. 3 weeks later, they got a dog. And they're like, they called me. And so I met Nicole through Rob, her husband, and she was like, we're making a show. And I was... when we talked about it, it was more of like a competition show. It was less like a reality show of like cameras following me and more like something elevated and cool and intentional. And so we just, over the years, we developed the ideas, and she sat down with me and she's like, okay, how do you picture the set being? Draw it out. Like draw the, like where would the judges table
That's
be?
So
and where
cool.
would, yeah. Wow. And so like, and she actually sold the show on her own. I mean, she's so connected in this industry. She sold it just off of the sizzle that we made.
Yeah, and it was an amazing sizzle.
I mean, that's
what made me want to do it. They sent me the sizzle and I was like, this looks like the most fun show ever.
Wow.
And so
it's hard to do with sizzles. Let's just like put that out
there. She has a genius
there.
Editor. Yeah. And wow. I gave her like tons of like... photos for reference and the vibe and the tone, and I just like put together collages of looks and just visuals, and she put together this amazing sizzle and sold it, and she was like, you know, she just kept calling me with good news. We sold it. I found out
she's gonna be on HBO Max.
Then I found out we got picked up for 12 episodes. Like she just kept calling me with good news, and I was crying. I was like, I'm not a big crier, but I'm crying. Because my two worlds are colliding.
Yeah.
Who knew the dog grooming would lead me to the other stuff?
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's awesome. And so Jess and I got to watch the first episode today, and it's so much fun. And, you know, what really comes across is like me, Jess, and Rob and Thede, like we really do have so much fun. We laugh so much.
And it's hard. I mean, this is my first time doing this, but I've been told like chemistry like ours is not normal. And it's like the three of us just got along. Also, like we all have mutual friends.
Yeah. I knew Robin because Robin came and did game show and was so much fun and such a pro. And we shared like we were working on the same floor when she was writing a Black Lady sketch show and I was working on game show. And so we knew each other from that. But it's so funny because the producers were like, and of course, you and Jess and Robin will have amazing chemistry and that will happen. And I was just like, y'all are assuming that. But you can tell like people behind the scenes are like, they're trying to establish this thing of like, and of course, the chemistry will be amazing. But you can tell that's what they're nervous about. And like, so we weren't able to like meet in person beforehand. And then we just literally like arrived on set, and luckily like the three of us started talking and didn't stop. It really was just so fun. And Robin
I love her so much. I feel so honored that she's in my life now. I feel like she has the biggest heart. She's such a good person. She's just one of those fantastic. Loyal kind of ride or die type of people that would just like have your back and be there for you. I just feel really lucky. I think we're really lucky. We got lucky because none of us are like assholes. I just think we got really lucky because it could have gone the other way.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, yeah. And also it's just like, I mean, Robin, talk about a hustler. Like she really works her fucking ass off.
And she's so graceful. I'm a mess when I'm like my cup is full. I'm overwhelmed. She was doing so much during the shoot.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, I just really admire her and look up to her.
She's the best.
We'll talk about what it was like to shoot, because I feel like you guys were one of the like first shows to shoot in LA, at least like during COVID. But like you guys sort of reported this in the press release, no COVID cases at all during the entire course of filming. They were so on top of their testing regimen for you guys. What was that like?
It was trippy.
It was weird. So we basically were like, it was like me, Jess, and Robin had like the backstage area, and we were kind of just like all together the whole time. And then, you know, it's weird. Like hair makeup was basically in like hazmat suits, like putting our makeup on and everything. But I will say this, and this is something that I want to tell everyone that's, you know, nervous about getting back to work and stuff like that. My takeaway from it was it really, I always think like whenever I'm on set and there's a good vibe, it does become like a little family. Like I know our set was like a family is a kind of a cliche thing to say, but one thing that I took from the experience was not only was everyone just so excited to be back at work and working on this show because it really is so positive and it's so nice to see like this profession get its shine finally, yeah, because it never has. But also everyone working on set was really taking care of each other. And it was like really like top of mind for everyone in coming to work every day. Like everyone was really taking the quarantining seriously. Everyone was really like checking in with each other in terms of their physical space and everything. So it actually like was an even better experience than a good experience is, because you came into it with love and care, and also came away from it after we had completed it and we had said, wow, we did that. Because I'll say this, like, I don't think I've heard of one other production that has not had one or at least one positive case that's Ooh. Shooting right now. We were really lucky that that happened. And
wait,
I'm
so there are
grateful.
Other places, there are other productions where someone tests positive.
And yeah, and
shit,
then they have to like shut, they have to like pause or shut yeah. down, or that person can't work.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it, you know, it's tough because no one knows for sure how you get or don't get this. So people are really trying their hardest. And you know, the tests aren't always accurate, but we were tested every single day. And, you know,
and
it
also
was
like we weren't
crazy.
Allowed to eat with everyone. We weren't allowed to even in the morning. I would really want to just get my coffee. But
someone's got to get it.
Someone was like, hey, can I get you something? Why don't you go inside and I'll bring it to you? And I'm just like, I mean, it sounds great to be waited on, but honestly, I just want to get my coffee. You know, it's just very weird to like not be independent.
Right.
But, you know, we did it.
And Matt's kind of saying that like the consideration was built into this process being so, you know, precautionary, and everyone really had to look out for each other on this collective level where you really are thinking about every single person in that environment, which, I mean, it's crazy that sort of wasn't the firm case before, in the before times where like, mm-hmm. You wouldn't come into these situations necessarily being like, well, that we're a unit.
Mm. Yeah,
you know, we all have to like work together to make sure we can work towards this common goal. To have like, you know, these protocols in place, which are unfortunate and whatever and bizarre, but like to have them kind of like establish this tone of, well, we're all working towards the same thing is pretty cool.
Bo, how That's are awesome. You feeling about going back?
Oh, so many ways. We don't have to talk about them. I'm probably not allowed to.
Okay, yeah, probably got to keep a lid on it. But
keep a lid on. But let's take a quick break, and then we have to ask Jess the question.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll be right back with Jess Rohn. And we're back. Matt, you asked the question.
See, here's the thing. Jess actually texted me yesterday and she was like, I'm nervous about this part of it. And I was like, why? And she was like, because there's so many different things I could say and I don't know what to say. And I was like, well, you have to choose the thing that in choosing your moment of culture, that was the moment that made you say culture was for you. It's that thing that's that intangible thing. It happened and all of a sudden your life took on a new course and you didn't know why. And she was like, okay, I'm still confused. I'll still think about it. And I was like, that's par for the course. So I am now going to turn to Jess and say, what have you decided on? What was your moment of culture that made you say culture was for me, Jess Rohn?
It can be multiple things too, if you're torn between stuff.
Okay. Okay. So these are the three things that I thought of. Maybe you guys can weigh in.
Okay. We sure
so
can.
So I grew up in L.A., in the 90s, and I was very into ska music.
Love okay. that.
Gwen Stefani, when she was singing songs with Sublime, like that OC back in the day, OC ska scene.
Wow.
Then OC I became a raver, and electronic music was really influencing me.
You were a Molly Doer?
I was a Molly Doer.
Young Molly Doer?
This was 20 years ago, I was doing Molly and raving like a candy raver when I was a kid.
Oh my God. There were kids at school like 17 years old who would go to raves, 16 and like fucking roll.
Yeah.
And I was like, those kids are crazy, and now it's like my favorite.
Oh yeah, 100%. Wait, what's a candy raver?
I love mom.
Oh, well, candy God. Is I'm like dating mom. Myself.
Candy is it like flipping? Are you like changing drugs? Is that what it is?
No, candy flipping is a thing. Back in the day when you were candy flipping, it is my understanding that you were just doing acid and Molly.
Acid and Molly.
Oh, but
you were staggering them.
We just called it E back in the day. E. It wasn't know, like yeah. the good shit.
I remember when it was E. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
like
yeah.
the good shit is Molly, and now it's like, you know, prime and powder, and it's like a clean high, and like that's the end of it. But back then it was like cut with speed, and you were up till 6 a.m. like a lunatic.
Oh my God.
Not like I'm a drug addict or anything. I don't do it anymore at all.
Okay, so Scott into Raver. Okay, yeah. And then what? Complete the story.
Oh, just, and then like I touched on it before, but like, and I told Matt, I'm going to be such a nerd, but improv really changed my whole life.
I mean, I cannot.
Bo and Yang, you sort of are very kindred with Bo and Yang, because Bo and Yang also did improv as a youngster.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I was a late bloomer. I wish I did it when I was younger. I didn't start till I was in my late 20s, but I was really into it. Like a crazy person. Like in front of the line at UCB in every class.
Yeah, we were all there.
Improv boot camp. Like, I was, it was a lot.
I still think we have not as a community of improvisers or ex-improvisers, ex-UCBers, whatever. Let's just keep it to UCB, okay? Because that's where our circles overlap.
Mm-hmm.
What was it about UCB and that culture that made it so, like, we were all acolytes. We were all like, oh my God, we have to stay up for all of DCM. Like, what was it about that culture that made...
Oh, God.
Like, there is something... I mean, I don't want to, like, kind of, like, cheaply, like, compare it to a cult, but there was something, like, that just demanded your devotion to it and dedication to it. And I'm trying to figure out, like, what was the promise there?
I have an opinion on this. And what do you guys... And I want to know what you guys think. I think that, for me... When I was in high school, the cool kids were always like, that was not really attainable for me, because it was just like, you had to be like straight and a certain way to look. And the way that popularity was gauged just never really connected with me. But I always wanted to be recognized for being good at something. And I feel like I always had a good sense of humor. And then when I went to college and like saw the sketchy improv scene, and then the UCB scene was like the macro of that in New York, it was like everything. Mm-hmm. Like if you were pursuing comedy in New York, everyone was like, well, when's your next UCB class? That was just what it is. I think that UCB, at least in the way that I saw things at the time, seemed to celebrate people for being smart and funny. Whereas popularity for me was always based on like looking a certain way or whatever and doing certain things or lifestyle things. Whereas this was like, oh, these people who rise to the top are the quote unquote smartest and funniest. Mm-hmm. Now looking back, I know that's not true. It's like kind of like exclusive to certain people. And I can see the exclusivities of UCB now in retrospect. But at the time I was like, God, to be able to go up there, say the smartest, funniest thing, and then become like a star in this arena. And I was always someone that wanted to act and perform, but I didn't take acting classes or anything. And I thought this is a fun way to get into it. But I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. I mean, not the opposite of that, but I'm the opposite of like, I started off taking acting classes in LA and like having breakthroughs in my classes and just scene study classes and taking it so seriously and doing all this dramatic acting. And I went to a school called Playhouse West, and I went all the way through the advanced program, and I was just so into it. But I was never good at homework, and I was never good at like preparing. And like finally I was like, improv, I don't have to break down a scene. I can just show up and play. And when I first found improv, I was like, holy shit, this is where I belong. This is what I want. These are my people. But I think you're totally right. It's like, it's magical when it's done well.
It's unlike anything
you've seen when it's done well. And I started UCB in New York. And when it's when you see a magical thing like that performed in front of you, and you're just like, I want to do that so bad. I want to be that. I want to be that good. I want to be that smart and funny and quick and all of it. Mm-hmm. And it's like a drug. And it's also, you know, I think improv attracts a certain kind of person, you know.
Yeah.
We might be the underdogs in our real life in some way. And if you can succeed at this thing, then you're finally validated. You're finally funny. You're finally good. And you won't stop until you're good. And you won't be good until they say you're good. So you keep going. You're competitive. And it's also the culture. You know, everyone's just scrambling to get on a Herald team or a Mod team. Yeah. And it's just, you know, a frenzy. God, I don't miss it. But I do. I mean, I miss performing improv, but I don't miss feeling like shit so much. Yeah. I just felt like I wasn't good. I wasn't funny. You're not talented unless you're on a Herald team.
But that was the common valuation. That was the common evaluation, like, that everyone would sort of buy into, which was, oh my God, that Lloyd team audition was so awful. And they were just like, they just didn't really laugh. And it was just so awkward. And oh God, this indie team show is just, it's like everyone was in this constant, at this constant frequency of like discomfort, which is one thing that I'm like, that I still don't think we've like fully like, I think there's just time, more time has to pass before we like realize why we were really all just like so like uneasy. Because that
it's interesting.
I put the weight of the world on it. If I got on a team, it means I got reps. I can book things. I could be a series regular on a TV show. That's how big it was to me. If I got on a Herald team, it means I will get on a TV show. And that's all I wanted. It was like my way out. It was like, it's a clear path with like steps in front of you where it's like, here you go. Just get to this door. And once you open the door, all of Hollywood is going to cast you in everything. And you'll have reps and people will believe in you and you'll be the cool thing.
But that was only true for like maybe a year and a half.
Oh my God. You know? All these people. I mean, look, it's been so many years since this happened for me. And I'm sure for most people, it's just like you, now that we're out of it, you know, it's just, it was a little toxic. And it's sad because really talented people thought that they were bad, thought that they were not funny or talented.
That's the worst thing.
I mean,
You know what, though? I'm sorry, really quick. Everybody, so many people have this same story. And now I'm thinking, it wasn't just me that felt like this.
No.
Sorry, Matt, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, I'm realizing now specifically why I fell into the UCB thing. And I do think this is the case for a lot of people. And this is going to sound insane for me to say here. But I remember being so depressed when I was 18 years old that I, like, got back to my room in college. I was closeted. I was like crying. I just was like, it was not happening for me in college. And I wanted so desperately, as like a, you know, kid who grew up on Long Island, like I wanted to succeed in the entertainment industry so badly. And I thought my skills aligned with Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. And so I remember I Googled Amy Poehler in my lowest moment. And I saw everything she had done. And I was like, I'm going to do exactly everything that she did to get to where she's at. And I got on my sketch team at college because she was on her improv team at Boston College. And I saw that she had a thing called UCB. And that's when I signed up for UCB classes because I thought, legitimately, I thought, this is a pathway to get to Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a lot of the way a lot of people think. And then once you get into the UCB community, there's different check marks that pop up because you're already headed toward a check mark.
You know, when you're in your classes, everyone wants the same thing. And we're all just trying to get on that house team. Mm-hmm. And so like you become competitive with people. It's like we started at the same time and now they're on a team and I'm not. Like there's just like a lot, you know. And so I think it was that consistent discomfort. That is like, why are we doing this to each to ourselves?
Well, it's also kind of, there's something fun about it, though.
Oh, you know my God, I mean? I had like, a blast. And
yeah,
I had a blast. It was the best
we,
year of
we,
my life.
We all edit and run into each other and die.
Oh, my God.
That's so funny.
I would love, I never experienced like an all team edit where everyone swept.
Oh, I loved that.
Wait,
wasn't that
like a DCM bit where it's just editing whole time?
Yeah, it sounds like a bit show. But there was a time, I used to see sets that like ended, sometimes they just ended so perfectly that everyone would jump off the back line. And I was like, oh, that has to feel so good. I remember like.
It's chasing that high.
I never succeeded at improv. I was more sketch. That was more my thing. But I remember like whenever the improv show would end and they'd all go backstage, I would always be like, I wonder what they're talking about. I was like, I wonder what they're all going to say, you know?
Because it's such it's a high. When you have a great show and when you fucking crush it, you know you're crushing it. You just know it. It's everything's working and you just, it's a high and there's just nothing like it. And I think that's another thing that kept people there is chasing that high of doing well. And you just never knew if the stars would align that night.
Sure.
But
improv's one of those things where it just slips. It's disposable, whatever. But like those moments of glory just sort of slip through your fingers and there's no actual sort of
longevity
or just actual like physical substance to them. Because how are you gonna use this? But like where it's like let's say with like writing or with like, you know, dog grooming, it's like, oh, like there are ways that you can develop these skills and track them very concretely.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas improv was just a little was so arbitrary, and then it just put you in it's this thing that puts you in your head the most, I think, out of any other.
I'll never forget watching. I had met Bowen like my freshman year, but then I went to an improv show that Bowen was doing in college. And I didn't really know Bowen super well. Like we had met, like we had went with mutual friends to one comedy show. And then I remember I went to go see his improv team, Danger Box, and he came off the back line and he initiated a scene with.
No, oh my God, no.
In a future world, the robots are the queens. And I was just
that is so stupid.
And I was just like, I was just like, this is like an insane initiation.
Oh my God, here we go.
Terrible improv move. Terrible improv move.
But I was in the audience and I was screaming because he had such star energy.
Ooh.
He was so amazing.
Yes.
You are, Bowen. You are. But Bowen, like, he just exploded off the stage, and I was like, oh my God. And I do think that there is something to that too. It's like when you see people that are so amazing, it makes you want to be involved in it too.
Yes,
and that's
for
Bowen.
Sure.
That was Bowen Yang.
100%. That's great.
We can't talk about this.
Well, I will talk about it.
Wait, I do. Before we move on, I do want to talk a little bit more about ska into raver into improviser. Okay. summarize these as the connective tissue as best as you can. Like, how did one go into
Oh my God, I've never even thought about it.
Did you used to skank at like bowling alleys?
Yeah, I did. I had the Betty Page haircut. I wore creepers.
Yeah. Oh my God.
That's so cool.
I would just go to all the underground ska shows and see these like bands. There used to be a club called the Alligator Lounge, and it's like where the New Art Theater is, like on Santa Monica off the 405. Like I would drive there. But yeah, I would go to all the show every weekend, you know, and just see all these little bands, date the guys. Just be the groupies of the bands. I still would, like, there's a band called Hepcat, and they were my favorite ska band.
Hepcat, like as in hepatitis cat?
Yes, but no. But if you ever are like in the mood for something fun and different, check out Hepcat. Yeah, they were a great band. And I don't even know what the thread is between ska and being a raver.
It seems like all three of these things are built on community.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like you're finding people who, and like you're talking about like what you're seeing on stage or what, you know, it's like you're talking about some shared experience.
That's so true. And, like, it's always like with a community. There's a community of ravers and a community of ska people. Ska people?
And of improvisers.
And of improvisers.
It's not like this thing. It's not like this thing where you went from ska into like solo archery or whatever, where it was like a very like solitudinal thing. It was like you went from like group to group, and like, I don't know, like maybe
that's true.
That's the thread.
I need a family, okay? I need a family.
Well, she wants. Okay. I have. It's very clear to me. She wants to be in a community. She wants to move, and she wants to sweat.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? So basically all these things are connected. When you're involved in the ska community, you're skanking.
Involved.
Involved.
Involved in the ska community.
You are involved in the ska community. And I actually, when I was in high school, I attended one ska thing at a bowling alley and I skanked with the best of them. And I remember being so sweaty in my white t-shirt and black jeans. And I was just like, really killing it, and like I did not belong there at all, but I was like, this was so fun because it was like dancing, but it wasn't like bump and grind, like I didn't have to be sexual. It was just like kind of like we're all kind of freaking out and doing our weirdo thing. And then with rave culture, it's like that's sort of, there's sort of a progression there.
Yeah.
You know?
What kind of ska was it? Was it like Real Big Fish or was it like
It was like Real Big Fish. It was okay. it was like, you know, commercial ska.
Right.
It was sort of like OAR-ish.
It became commercial. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I was like very into like the old Jamaican ska. And
like authentic.
Desmond Dekker and Phyllis Dillon and the Toots and the Maytals, like that.
Holy
kind
shit.
Of old.
Toots and the Maytals.
Yeah.
The singer
like it's
just
really
passed away.
Oh, yeah.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. But, no, that's okay. That's
moment of silence.
But that's where I became a ska music nerd, where I would just really get into like the old traditional ska music. And then like, do you guys know the bands like The Specials and Madness?
No.
From the 80s? Okay, so like, yeah, I was just, and then became like Real Big Fish and like those big, like Less Than Jake and Mighty Boss Tones.
Gwen Stefani would perform.
She did songs with Sublime back in the day. They're, you know, No Doubt really started off as like one of these smaller bands that came up when I was into ska. And then now, like, you know, she's a pop star, but.
Right. So what do you feel about Gwen Stefani now?
I mean, I like her. I don't know. I don't listen to a ton of her music, but I love, you know. She's an icon. I don't know.
She's definitely an icon.
She is an icon.
What I mean
she's
to say icon. Is like there
the
is a conversation
appropriation thing.
No, not that.
It's okay. What?
It's like the her and Blake Shelton like hanging out with like Paul Ryan at ski lodges and stuff. It's like that thing where it's like, oh, she's like, she's horseshoe theoried herself from being very punk aesthetic into being like this conservative woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You know, it seems like she's evolving into it's her journey, love and light to Gwen.
Love and light
she's
to Gwen.
Doing her
Thank
thing.
You. Yep.
She certainly is.
She certainly is. Talk about very briefly your experience at the DCM party space. If that recalls
oh
those echoes of the
God.
Rave.
Were you a hoe there?
I was a hoe.
Yes.
Yeah. I always wanted
I was
to be
a
but
drunk.
I wanted to be a hoe.
Drunk as fuck, stoned as fuck.
Yeah.
Getting disgusting in that basement hallway under Gristiti's. Mm-hmm. Just like hooking up with the grossest, sweatiest improvisers. Dancing in midnight shows on stage,
oh
taking off my clothes, just being a loon.
The things that I did in that space, I once ate a carrot that had been in John Gemberling's ass.
No.
Oh my God.
No!
Yeah.
Man.
I did.
What?
I ate it off the ground. So basically, he had done an improv
scene.
This is
disgusting.
Yeah, he had done an improv
scene,
and he had put a carrot in his underwear, and then like I guess the carrot came out, and I was so wasted in the improv scene after that I came out and like I was doing it, and I was like dancing, and the crowd was like screaming, and they were like, "Eat the carrot, eat the carrot," and I was just like, "You want me to eat this carrot?" And they were like, "Yes, slut." And then I was like, I'm going to eat it. And I ate the carrot off the ground. And I thought they were, and they were screaming. And they were like, oh my God. And I thought, oh, they're really freaking out that I ate this carrot off the ground. And I'll never forget.
Wait.
This
James Dwyer.
Stinky asshole floor carrot.
James Dwyer looked me in the eyes afterward and he goes, dude, that carrot was in Gemberling's ass. And I was like, what? And I remember I just like could feel the carrot
so
in my
didn't
stomach.
Know.
No, I didn't know at all. And I just moved on. I moved on from that. I like went on and did a new drug probably.
But wait, should
and
we
then
tell
years
the...
later he would be the star of Broad City.
Should we tell the readers what DCM is?
Delve Close Marathon.
Yes.
It's like a huge, we've talked about it before on the pod,
oh, have
but
you?
If
okay.
you don't know, if you don't know, now you know. It's like Delve Close Marathon is like essentially Woodstock for improvisers every year, or at least
it's
it was.
It's 24 a big hours festival. For 3 days straight, 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. shows every 15 minutes, and yeah. you don't sleep, yeah. and you're disgusting, and it's horrible, but
And the
amazing.
Biggest comedians and yeah. that are like related to improv in the world come and do it. And I mean, Del Close was like essentially the sensei of improv, and he was like a godlike figure in improv, which is problematic. But you know, he in his image was Del Close Marathon was created, and it was essentially like a festival for 3 days. And I remember it always fell on Pride Weekend in New York.
Yeah, it was bad.
Which was a nightmare.
Oh, that's right.
Terrible.
Oh
terrible.
My
trying
god.
Trying to cross town. During Pride in New York, forget it. You're stuck
uptown,
also, baby.
But just like for gay improvisers, that was like insane.
You could, there's too much stuff. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, some great horrible memories from. I mean, like those bit shows were wild. You had Diaper Baby, where everyone would come out and these men would come out in diapers full of shit. I mean, there was just so much. I remember there was one where I think Matt and I, you and I, did something where. People had to drink milk, like every scene.
It was milk and peppers. So you
milk
had
and peppers.
It
yeah,
was you had
right.
to, you had to eat a hot pepper, and while you were right. doing the scene, and the peppers were so hot, and then there was milk there to like stop the spice.
Spice,
and
yeah.
you had to do the scene without drinking the milk. That was the whole thing. Milk and peppers.
Milk and peppers.
And we also just... did we did a, I don't know if you were in this one, but me, Josh, and Aaron and Pat and a bunch of people and Brian Foss, and it was all gays, and we were all pretending we were from Boston and calling each other faggot. It was just 15 minutes of Boston gays calling each other faggot, and that's that was good. It and that was a show. It was
wow.
all gay
wow.
men being like yeah faggot, and just like and it was just like
comedy, people.
Some readers,
comedy.
Some readers will not like that, but I don't know. I don't
like
know what
that.
To tell you. It's a part of comedy history. the things that I ended up doing during DCM, I got my dick sucked on the street.
Yeah,
but not the first time.
No, the first and only
it.
Time on 8th Avenue at like 2 in the morning. I off Grindr, I like hooked up with this guy on the street.
Oh my god!
I could have gotten arrested.
Like, traffic? Like, did you tuck behind a tree?
In front of God and Gristides.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not kidding. It was dark.
Wow.
But anyway, I don't think so, honey. It's time for it now. I don't think so, honey. What is it?
I don't think so, honey, is our segment where we each take 1 minute to really get angry about something in culture. Wouldn't you say?
I would say. It's where we take 1 minute to rail against something
yes.
in culture. We get so mad and we rail it. Like you're on 8th Avenue during DCM.
Ooh, baby.
Okay, so I have something that I alluded to before.
Okay. That's right. And I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll go Matt, me, and then we'll do Jess.
Yeah.
Perfect. This is Matt Rogers. I don't think so, honey. His time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. The marriage of Michael Darby and Ashley Darby. This has to end.
Yes.
Ashley, no. And honestly, I think I get what you're going for here, which is you wanted to get pregnant again so that your daughter could have a sibling because your sibling is important to you. I 100% understand that. But babe, the husband's gotta go. Now that you have your
bad
family,
man.
Your daughter has like gonna have their sibling. You gotta go, girl, because he is bad news.
30 seconds.
I don't think so, honey. Michael Darby, I don't believe this thing that you say about not sleeping with these women. You grabbed you grabbed the asses and assaulted a member of the Potomac crew, something that for some reason does not get discussed anymore. I don't think so, honey. Him.
15
and
seconds.
I don't think so, honey. Ashley, now that you know better, because fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Honey, you need to know this phrase because you're about to get fooled a
Five
third
seconds.
Time. And I know that you keep saying you're not afraid to leave Michael. It seems like you are. I don't think so, honey. You need to buck up.
And that's 1 minute. No,
your it's husband fool me is bad.
For Ashley, it's fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, still shame on you,
yes,
Ashley.
She clearly does not know the
phrase. Oh, and Jess is playing
phrase.
The applause. Thank you.
She doesn't know the phrase because if she did know the phrase, she would know that she is getting rode hard and put away wet by her husband publicly. And I can't believe the scene in Potomac, which was them at dinner discussing their business, and then he was like, we're done. And the producer came over, and the fourth wall was broken yet again on a Real Housewives show. Yeah. And she was just like, obviously through with it. And I think that she doesn't want to be in this marriage at all.
No,
I think she wanted her kid to have a sibling because I think she feels it's important, but she needs to get out of that marriage.
She loves her half sister, and I don't necessarily think that she feels that like it's a more legitimate siblinghood for these kids to have the same parents. I think that it's so clearly fucked up. Michael's answering the phone as if she's a nuisance, even though he's only ever been in the wrong. It's like, this guy is one of the most vile human beings.
Oh, he's one of the worst people on television. And it's really getting to the point now where
Not as bad as Ramona Singer. He's, unfortunately, Ramona Singer still takes the cake. I want her to die alone, as I've said.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and say if it's Team Michael versus Team Ramona, I'm Team Ramona. I don't think Michael Darby is permissible.
Ramona is maybe a white supremacist. She keeps tiki torches in her garage.
I hope Andy asks you about all your claims against Ramona. And I actually have to
say, I would love to pop off about Ramona.
Disappointed that you're not on an episode of Watch What Happens Live with Ramona, because I think I would love to be
in the future. I would love to be on an episode with Miss Ramona Singer.
Would
I would love
you
to give
confront her
the business. Yes,
really.
Oh my god.
I would love Bowen to make it happen. That.
Okay, so basically, the three is me, Bowen, and Joel. And Joel was on Watch What Happens Live with Ms. Kenya Moore herself.
Yes, huge.
Bowen is about to be on with Monique Samuels. And I am putting into the universe that one day when I get booked on Watch What Happens Live, God willing, inshallah,
you
one
and
day
Rinna?
I get booked. I don't care. I just want to be with a housewife. I want to
be
with a housewife.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
It will happen. It's my favorite show. When Bowen said he was going to be on it, I immediately was like, I was popping off. I was like, okay, well, it might be Robin because she hasn't been on yet. And, well, you know, Candace she's coming on. And so I watch it every night. I love Watch What Happens Live. I'm such a Bravaholic.
You're a Bravaholic. I was going to be happy with any of the Potomac women. And I said that in my response back. I was like, I'd love to do it, especially if it's with the Potomac housewife. And
I'm so proud of you that you got booked on it. Oh my God.
Thank you, girl. But Matt was like, it's going to be, the options are Wendy, Monique,
Queen.
Or Robin. Queen. And I was like, any of them, I would be so happy with.
I'm kind of disappointed that you're not on with Wendy, because I think that you and Wendy would become friends.
Me and Wendy, we could talk about like our immigrant parents. We could
I was thinking of you during this episode. I was like, there's so many similarities.
I know. I love Wendy Asefo a lot. Anyway, sorry, we're talking a lot of Potomac. I have an I Don't Think So Honey.
Okay. So traditionally, after I do my I Don't Think So Honey, Bowen Yang will do his I Don't Think So Honey. And that tradition is upheld tonight, because it is time for Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So Honey on this, the episode of Just Rona on Las Cosuristas, as I get my camera up. All right, here we go. Bowen Yang, your I Don't Think So Honey time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Cooking, it's messy, it's hard, it's inconvenient. It's we all sort of accept it as part of our lives. Even with restaurants, even with ordering delivery, cooking, I can't believe that it's a necessary part of our... There should be readily edible food growing off of trees, in the parks, in the grass. Stuff that's not just bananas and fruits and vegetables. Meals should be kind of coming from the
30
earth.
30 seconds.
Capitalism has driven us to a place of disgusting surplus. Why are we not abolishing cooking? We should have ready-made food available to us at all times on demand. Cooking. Today I made a baked ziti. It was so difficult. And the process of collecting ingredients, make sure the dishes were washed before you cook. Then after you cook, you got dirty dishes and you got to clean those dishes
Five
all over
seconds.
Again. It's a Sisyphean task to cook, because guess what? You're going to have to do it again because you got to eat.
And that's 1 minute. That was a gorgeous dressing down and also explanation of cooking for all
yes.
the readers.
Thank you, Jess.
Yes,
you, Jess.
The applause is loud and it is raucous. Hans
says, I've never disagreed with an I Don't Think So Honey
anymore. I Don't Think So Honey anymore. All of a sudden, Hans is Team Matt. It's probably because I called him hot earlier in the chat.
He looked very good.
He looked really hot today. But listen, I identify with you, girl. You know I'm not a fan of the stuff.
No, you don't like to cook. We're two sisters. We don't like to cook.
We're two sisters who don't like to cook. It's really culture number 32.
We're two sisters who don't like to cook. I love watching cooking videos. I love food culture. I love watching other people cook. I don't like doing it. Does that make sense?
Padma is not going to like this.
Well, no, I love watching Padma cook in her kitchen. I love watching her make a dosa. I love watching her do anything.
I don't
like cooking for me.
When we have Padma again, I would like the podcast episode to be us cooking with Padma. I want to figure out how we can do that.
We can do it. We can just send an ingredients list.
In the great after, when COVID is less of a concern. Okay, so Han says he's going to send her that clip. Well, I think we can make it happen. Padma is down to clown. Jess, run a thoughts on cooking.
I really see your argument because, you know, you have to clean the dishes and then you cook. And then guess what? You got to clean the dishes again. So
it's
hard.
It's brutal.
And you know what? A baked ziti, that's really, it's an advanced dish. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm totally with you. Fuck it. You know what?
It's
get
so
takeout.
Hard.
Cooking is a vicious cycle. It's actually
cooking
real culture number 194.
It's a vicious cycle.
Cooking is a vicious cycle.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's a vicious cycle. And
I'm really grateful that you two are receiving this and hearing me and giving me this space.
And I hear.
I can't wait for this. I Don't Think So, Honey. From Jess Roman.
Oh, this is going to be
a good
one.
Are you ready? Because this one I know. This one I fucking know.
This one I know. So she said, out of the two segments, the cultural moment that was for me, she was uneasy about, but the I Don't Think So, Honey, she was not uneasy about.
Oh, I got it.
Because
it's really the only thing that means anything to me.
Okay,
okay,
well,
Matt, you want a timer?
Yes. Okay, this is Jess Rona's I Don't Think So, Honey, and her time starts now.
Okay, I Don't Think So, Honey, walking your dog on hot asphalt. Okay, people don't realize that when you go to a flea market, if you go to a farmer's market, guess what? It's on the street. It's in a parking lot. And dog is lowered to the ground, which means your dog is hot. I am a groomer, so I've seen dogs with burned pads because people don't, not that bad, but people don't realize that just because it's like maybe 79 degrees, it's breezy, it doesn't mean that your dog is not panting its ass off, overheating. I almost can't go to a farmer's market or a flea market because I get so upset when I see people walking their dogs on asphalt. Stay in the shade. Keep your dog home. If it's more than 75 degrees outside, don't take your dog to the flea market or the farmer's market or anywhere on the hot asphalt. Listen to your dog. Watch your dog. Don't do it.
That's 1 minute.
Wow.
I will say this.
Wow.
You know what? And she truly, Jess truly will get on the, it's amazing. And I can't wait for people to see it in the show, but she will get on the level of the dog and the dogs, the dogs will immediately
listen to her.
Settle. It's so crazy.
I've watched videos of Jess with these doodle mixes, with these and these doodles, like, and she is very attuned to how they're feeling. She's like, we're gonna give the facial, and they're not gonna understand what's happening, but you gotta let them sort of like know that it's okay. And I'm just like, oh my god, this woman knows how dogs think.
Can you
Huge.
Talk a little bit about how do you communicate with dogs?
Yeah, of course. I communicate, well, you mean like just in general how anyone can do it or just me particularly?
What, talk about your process.
So for me, I look for opportunities from the dog to respond to. So what I do is I'm just extremely focused on any nuance in their behavior, and it's something that's become second nature to me. So if a dog shies away from something, I know that they're unsure of me or they're not trusting. Usually it's when dogs, when I comb up on their paws, because if they have any tangles in between their toes, that's a painful spot. Some spots are more painful. So for me, I communicate with them by looking for moments, opportunities opportunities to respond by being gentle. And so I can show them, I see you. I know you don't like this. Watch how I've got your back. Watch. I'm going to go really slow and gentle and show you that I see you. And once a dog or human feels like they're seen and heard, they're calm. This is for anybody. Wow. So if you can just find any way to show someone that you see them and that they are understood, that's the approach of communication with dogs. And it's taken me 20 years to get to that point.
That is amazing. And I will say, like, it's true. Like, because the dogs come in and, you know, it's a big set. There's a lot of people around. And also many dogs are not always comfortable being groomed. Like, every dog has a different relationship to that process. You know, not every dog has been groomed since they were a baby or, like, you know, so, and it was kind of a mixed bag with the dogs that came into the show. And so that was something that you kept saying to the groomers was, you know, even though it's high stakes and it's a competition, like, you always did put the emphasis on listening to the dog, giving the dog what they want. You know what I mean? Which I was so impressed by, and I had never thought, like, and also what can happen when you raise your voice around or at a dog, like, that is not the way to always discipline or get its attention.
Yeah, totally. For sure.
Wow.
I'm just like, beautiful. I was very floored.
Very serene. I love.
Well, she is.
Tell.
She's also like the dog whisperer.
Selfishly, as a groomer, if my dog is happy, my job is easier. So I've done everything I can to learn how to calm a dog so that I can have a nicer day and not have to fight or, you know, look, dogs are avoidant. That's what they do. They just avoid us. They don't want to, you know, their nails trimmed or whatever. So if I can work with a dog that is avoidant, then I can have an easier time, an easier day.
Mm-hmm. Wait till you see these dogs in the happy hoodies, which are these little hoodies that the dog they put around the dog's head so that when the blow dryer is loud, it's not as loud.
Oh my God. It's so cute.
They are really cute.
You're going to love this show.
I can't wait. I'm telling you, like, and people flip for dogs. Like, even for people who, like, aren't dog people, it's like, no, like, dogs, like, are powerful sort of, like, media, like sort of teasers. Like, they'll like, draw you into something. I was telling Matt this, like, I used to work on this at this e-commerce site, and, like, anytime there would be options where there would be a photo with a dog or not a dog, every single time they would be like, you have to include the dog because it drives up, like, engagement by, like, 500% or whatever.
Really?
Because people just love dogs.
Yeah.
And so I think this will be a hit. I think it's going to be, I'm going to watch every single episode in one sitting. I cannot wait. And I'm going to rewatch them because I think it'll be that kind of show.
I'm really excited. And like I said today, like, we did get to watch the first episode and it was so much fun. And the show is, I would say if I had to break it down into third, it's like a third comedy with the panel. It's a third dog grooming process and learning about that. And it's a third narratives about these amazing contestants who are really great. And we have such an amazing, diverse group of groomers. And I was actually wanted to say, like, it was so fun to see. There was not one groomer that I felt like was duplicated. You know what I mean? That we didn't have, like,
totally.
Every
That's
single
a good
one was
point.
So different.
Yeah.
Like, and the dog grooming community is so diverse and different and dynamic. And
I love this. I love this.
Before we end, I just want to know, like, how involved were you in picking the contestants?
I wasn't really in charge of casting. I would send casting my friends or groomers that I think are good. But every episode I was handed some cards, and that's the first time I would see who was on the show. So I didn't know who was on the show until we shot. And some people I knew and I was so excited to see them, and then some people I didn't know, and I was really surprised at the skill and the different techniques and the innovation the inventions that they would come up with. Because they all had to deal with a theme. And, like, how would they embrace that theme? And that was really fun.
These themes are so fun.
And the accessories. That was more of Robin's whole thing where she either loved or hated the accessories. And, you know, we never knew what we were going to get with Robin.
Well, Robin loves the tails, and she loves to talk about the tails, and she always loves to, you know, talk about the worthiness of different accessories that are on the animal and the colors. And because that's another thing is a lot of the dogs, like, they get colored And so this is something that I don't think a lot of people know, is that I certainly didn't know that, and I was the host of it. But it's really, really, really amazing to see what these people do. They're really artists. And there's some people that have come in and they really represented themselves amazingly on the show. And so I'm super excited about
it. Me too.
Oh, I'm so excited to watch. I'm over here just like, I want it to be Thursday. I cannot wait. Wow. Name another legend.
Jess, thank you so much for coming on. I knew the second I met you, I was like, I couldn't wait to have you on. And I could not say enough about how lovely I think you are and how talented I think you are and how much I appreciate you putting your whole spirit and just like your good vibe into this show, because I do think that it's going to make people really happy. And I think that that's like, you know, it's an opportunity for me, yes, but I think for like everyone to just like take a break and watch this thing, because I think one thing that everyone in this world has in common is like, you know, that feeling of seeing a happy little dog, like, you know, do its thing. I just think it's going to make people feel really good right now when people really want to feel really good. And so that's because of you and because of...
And you, know, friend.
Well, the show wouldn't exist without you doing what you do. So I want to thank you. And I want everyone to watch Hot Dog, which is premiering with 6 episodes tonight at midnight, aka tomorrow, September 24th, and there will be 6 more episodes before the end of the year, TBD. But yes, this is a 12 episode first season, and we are so excited to show them. So that's
my
spiel.
We end every episode with a song.
Well, that's actually good. I live for the applause. We didn't even talk about Gaga's new video.
Okay.
I live for the applause, live for the applause, live for the way that you cheer and scream for me. The applause, applause, applause. Give me the thing. And to hear the rest of that, you can listen to Lady Gaga's underrated album,
Art Pop.
Bye.